Hey, everybody. Welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of FThisMovie.com. Scary movie love for scary movie lovers. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I'm very excited for this week's Scary Movie Month show. Here to talk The Craft with me is everyone's favorite goth witch, Alejandra Gonzalez. How are you?
I'm so excited to be here for this.
Happy Scary Movie Month. Do you feel like you have been typecast?
Yeah, but I kind of like it.
I'm going to talk The Craft. Who should it be with? Oh, I know. The goth witch.
This month reminds people of me more than my own birthday month does. So.
Well, I'm very excited to talk about The Craft. Hopefully you are all very excited to hear about The Craft. A couple of things, of course, before we get into that conversation. Hopefully by now, if you're listening to this, you have taken part in the Scary Movie Challenge all month long during October. Whenever you watch a scary movie, head over to fthismovie.com, click on the Scary Movie Challenge at the top of the page, and leave a 7-word review for that scary movie. It's been a ton of fun. We are just about 10 days into the month and already have over 1,000 7-word reviews, so that kicks ass. We got to ramp it up, though. There's always a dip in the middle of the month. I'm trying to convince Alejandra to leave 7-word reviews for the movies that she has been watching.
I can't, though. They're all so witty.
Mine are not witty, so I have lowered the bar to a place that's very easy for you to clear.
I beg to differ. I have like 3 of yours on my list.
Oh, that is a lot of nonsense. Before we read our 7-word reviews and talk about what we've seen lately, I just want to quickly thank Timothy S. and Ross for your donations to fthismovie.com. They help keep the site running all month long. We appreciate it. Thank you both very, very much. As I said, we were going to share some of our 7-word reviews that we have enjoyed reading. There's been, like I said, over 1,000, so it's hard to pick some out. But I've chosen a few that I would like to share. Would you like to go first, Alejandra?
I would love to go first.
All right.
So, I mentioned this before, but I really hope other people find this funny. But I think my favorite one is from Ryan on The Devil's Candy. And it's, guitar turns to literal axe. Exit Sandman.
I think I have a Devil's Candy one in here, too, somewhere. Mine are bookended by Cult of Chucky reviews. So first is from Richard Tasker on Cult of Chucky. Fiona Dorff's impression of Dad, weirdest boner.
Oh, my God. That was a great movie. Okay. So my next one is from JB, and it's for Bram Stoker's Dracula, and it's Commissioner Gordon does big budget community theater. So true.
Isad says of American Psycho 2, All American Girl, an unparalleled achievement in getting things wrong.
My next one is from Cade Tucker on The Fun House. Sad truth, Gunther lasts longer than me.
I picked that one as well. One, because it's about one of my favorite movies, and two, because it's about premature ejaculation. Robin Buckley says of The Orphanage, I'm not crying, you're the one crying.
Patrick Bromley says about Leprechaun, we need to talk about Rachel's shorts.
For real. What is happening with her shorts in that movie?
I think it's just funny that you mentioned them to begin with.
I could focus on nothing else. I consider myself something of an expert on horror movie shorts. I once was going to write an article on the 10 greatest pairs of shorts in horror movie history. I decided that's pretty sexist. But Jennifer Aniston's shorts in that movie have 8 different kinds of prints on them. And they're like bad, bad early 90s.
Right. What better movie to have that short?
I guess. Stuart Gordon says of Night of the Living Dead, For Sale, Country House, Once Occupied 7.
Kanji Chris on Gerald's Game still leads to less violence than Monopoly.
Keith Love of Life Force, Hottest Space Vampire Ever, parenthetical, possessed Patrick Stewart.
And finally, Eric on the Bye Bye Man. Oops, should I not have written that?
glad that the Bye Bye Man is getting some watches this month. I have a few more that I will read. Angela Hager says of the innkeeper's advice, if hotel is haunted, just leave. Here's my Devil's Candy one. Tad Ghostel of the Devil's Candy. Tracksuit Satan ruins another Rex Manning day. Which I thought you would appreciate. Here are two that I can't necessarily take credit for, but they both come from films that I recommended in I Stream, You Stream, which is John Gutshall of the American Scream, Cross's Cry During Halloween documentary off list. And here's Chase Spence of The White of the Eye. It's got everything from audiophiles to necrophiles. Two more. Frank Levesque of Don't Kill It. Modern demon hunters take no shit, comma, vape. And, as I said, bookending the Cult of Chucky reviews from our own Eric Asperschlager, who's getting, I believe, two readings this week of Cult of Chucky. When one Dorif closes, another one opens. That's amazingly clever, Eric, and you're a son of a bitch for coming up with it. But again, thank you guys
How
very much.
How am I supposed to compete with that?
Well,
see?
Listen, mine are not good. I'm telling you, the bar is very, very low. So we just need to get some more reviews represented, and it's always nice to have people who write for the site, you know, represented in the seven-word reviews. We have to lead by example.
You're right.
Hopefully I've shamed you into doing this.
Yes.
Keep
I'm
it up.
I'm going to post multiple.
Thank you. Thank you. Keep it up everywhere. Plus, it's a way for me to know what you're watching. All these people are like hashtagging Scary Movie Month on Twitter, and I'm like, oh, that's great. But where are your reviews? But keep it up, everyone. It's been a ton of fun to read these, and we will continue to read them all month long. Alejandra.
Patrick.
Have you seen anything scary lately?
I've seen a few scary things. So I'm going to leave the best for last. I'm going to start with one of your recommendations. Actually, there's two of your recommendations on this list. Woo-hoo. But the first one is The Dark House.
Oh, yes.
By George Romero. Yes. It was in the column we posted. This was so refreshing for me. I know it's based on a Stephen King novel, but the concept was so original. And it actually scared the shit out of me because now when I'm pregnant, I'm going to make sure that the doctors know 100% that there's no child inside my child. Actually, my coworker's pregnant, and I kind of freaked her out by telling her the story. So we'll see. But it was just so refreshing, and I actually had no idea that Tim Hutton did both Thad and George, because George Stark looks so different from his twin brother in this movie. I was kind of hesitant start watching it because it kind of reminded me of The Dead Zone at first a little bit, which I didn't love.
Okay.
But I'm glad I gave it a shot because it was amazing.
Well, I'm glad that you liked it.
I really did like it.
That's awesome. I'm one for two.
Oh, wait, what do you mean one for two?
Well, you haven't talked about what the next one is yet, so
we'll
see.
Oh, I thought we were still talking about Edge of 17, which was another.
Oh, that's right. I'm two for two. Two for three, I guess. Two for three. We'll see how we do on the next one. All right, so The Dark Half, what else?
I saw Gerald's Game.
Okay.
This one was a little hard for me to watch, but I think the timing was really great. I thought at first that it would be maybe, like, a little boring because how much fun can a movie about, like, somebody being chained to a bed be? But I was totally wrong. It was totally amazing. Super entertaining, great performances from both of them. And also, a lot of people did not like the ending for some reason, but I loved the ending. I don't know if it's because, you know, the content kind of resonated with me, but I think it was beautiful. I think this is going to be one of my favorites of the year, actually.
Yeah. I like the ending thematically in terms of where the character goes. I don't want to say anything for fear of spoilers. I'm just maybe not as big a fan of the execution in terms of what we're actually shown on screen. And again, this comes basically straight from the book, so it's not Mike Flanagan's fault.
Well, I will say that the end did kind of feel like a Lifetime movie a little bit. I mean, not just like what happens, but the actual way it looked.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was like, HGTV, but it was still, I don't know. I guess it was just because I'm a huge cornball and I was like, yes.
Well, I think the last shot is so good and then it, you know, cuts to the credits and the score is so beautiful that, like, it totally pulls back at the end and wins me over completely. But just, and it's not that the ending derails the movie for me at all. I think it's really, really good and will probably be on my, you know, list of favorite horror movies of the year. It's just, it's almost the kind of thing where, to me, it stood out a little bit more because everything that preceded it is so good that it's, like, jarring to be sort of ripped out of that and put into something that feels very different. But maybe if I see it again, maybe that'll all work for me a little bit better.
Yeah, I think it does warrant a second watch. And also, there was a scene in there. I call them bone tomahawk scenes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because the rest of the movie is, like, not that scene.
Right.
You know what I mean? But it was just so good. I really can't wait to revisit it.
I was trying to, because I watched it without Erica, and then I was like, oh, I bet she would really like this, because she's drawn to a certain kind of story. But then, A, just describing the premise to her started freaking her out so badly that I don't know if she's going to watch it. And then I would almost have to sit next to her during it so I could tell her not to watch that scene, because I don't know if she would ever recover.
I had to look away. And yeah. I mean, I'm a fan of, like, the Hostel movies, which are pretty intense also. I had to look away. It was a lot.
It's so different because of the way that it's presented in this story that is so sort of emotionally raw, and Carla Gugino's performance gets us to this place, and then to see that, and it's played so real that it's so different than, like, regular horror movie violence, you know?
And it's just, so I didn't read the book, so I wasn't expecting that at all. And it just, I don't know, it was a lot for me to handle. But it was also really, it made the ending a little bit even more rewarding, you know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. And what was the third movie that you watched?
The third movie, I am so excited. I finally, upon your recommendation, you did change my life with this one.
Woohoo!
I saw Phantom of the Paradise.
Yes.
For the first time. And I don't know why Jessica Harper wasn't enough of a selling point for me. But oh my goodness. I can't even begin to describe this movie because nothing I say will do it justice. And I hate to do this because I do this all the time. And it makes me feel like I'm being reductive towards the movie. But I have something that I call the Suspiria flu, which I was talking to you about earlier.
Yeah.
And it's when everything I see is Suspiria, some way, shape, or form, especially if it's, like, even remotely avant-garde or, like, abstract.
Mm-hmm.
And I know this movie came out before Suspiria did. But, come on. The walls are pink. I saw it everywhere. And also Jessica Harper's in it, which, you know.
Right.
That's another similarity.
Right.
Oh, God, I love this movie so much. I don't even know what to say about it. It just made my heart feel warm. And also, fun fact, and I know everyone who's seen this knows this and is going to think I'm such a newbie here. But as I was watching the movie, I was like, oh, my God, Jessica Harper reminds me so much of somebody and I can't put my finger on it. Until after the movie, I started singing Carpenter songs mm-hmm. out of nowhere. And I was like, oh, Karen Carpenter. Okay, got it. And then somebody pointed out that the guy who plays Swan, so Paul Williams, he wrote the music for Phantom of the Paradise.
Yes.
Turns out he also wrote music for The Carpenters.
Yes.
So when my mind exploded.
He's like one of the greatest songwriters ever. If you haven't seen it, there's a documentary. I think it used to be streaming. It might still be. It's called Paul Williams, Still Alive. And it essentially just covers his entire career, both as a songwriter, as an actor, as sort of a talk show. He was like a fixture on the late night talk show scene in the 1970s. It's really, really great.
This movie changed my life, Patrick.
I am so happy to hear that. Like, it was
so great.
I kind of thought that you would love it just based on us sharing certain similar sensibilities. And I have a very similar reaction to the movie in that I love it to the point where it's, like, part of my DNA. But if somebody were to ask me why, I don't know that I could explain it. It's just that every single thing about it, from the aesthetic to the direction to the story to the music, like, I feel like it speaks directly to me. And I know there's a lot of people that feel that same way. And then I think there's just as many people who watch it and are kind of left cold by it, which isn't wrong of them, but I just think it's made for a very specific type of person, and I guess we are just those types of people.
I would be hesitant to recommend this to somebody like my parents.
Sure.
But I will say that I think the reason we love this so much is because we are Winslow, because we're so passionate about the things we love to the point where, like, it kind of does drive us insane, and we would do the most for it. You know what I mean? So,
and we're very... And some of us are hideous freaks.
Oh, my God. Yes, who wear masks constantly. I actually related more with Beef because he was wearing chokers all the time.
Plus, you guys have, like, a similar eye makeup thing, right?
Yes, yes. And I'm pretty sure he was a little bit gay, just like myself. So I just love this.
That's
so
one
much.
Of those. That's one of those touches that, like, when he talks in his regular voice, it's like he's doing this weird gay stereotype, circa early 70s, and it's one of those questionable choices. But you let it go because the movie is so full of crazy choices like that.
Exactly.
When Jessica Harper, aka Phoenix, is doing her audition and she's singing Special to Me, and then she finishes the song and she does that little dance off camera. Was it the best thing that ever happened to you?
Only second to having seen this movie to begin with.
I'm obsessed with the Jessica Harper dance, and I imitate it regularly.
She's just such a presence. And honestly, I haven't even seen Shock Treatment, which she is also in.
She is, and I know you have friends who love that movie. I don't love it, but I love her in it, and her voice is so insanely gorgeous. I remember the first time I saw it, I put something on Twitter like, oh my God, I could listen to Jessica Harper sing for the rest of my life, and the first response I got was somebody who was like, how long have you been hard of hearing? And it was some random dude who's just like being an asshole, and I just, do you even bother engaging with these people? I decided not to, but...
Good, because she does have, oh God, it's just so deep and like sultry. And yes. I honestly had to look up if it was even her singing, because I could not believe that the Suspiria girl had a voice like that. I was like, no way, that cannot be possible. And she's just this tiny little thing, and a voice like that was not expected to come out of her.
Yeah. So the first week of November here in Chicago, they're doing the Cinepocalypse Film Festival, formerly the Bruce Campbell Film Festival, and it has changed venues, and it is like a week long at least now. And on the one hand, that's great. It means more movies. On the other hand, it kind of sucks because of the change in location, and it was a lot easier to go to all of it when it was just like 4 days. But one of the final movies is this 35 millimeter print of Suspiria that has been touring from the Chicago Cinema Society. And again, I think I mentioned this on the Alien show, that I'm real reluctant to go see it because I'm worried that it's going to spoil the experience of seeing the 4K. But I think a day or two after I made that proclamation, they announced that Jessica Harper is going to be at the screening. And now I don't know what to do.
Now I have to fly there.
Right.
Oh, you have to. Come on.
I know, but what if the print sucks? Then I'm just there for Jessica Harper, I guess.
Yeah, but at the same time, I always say this, even when people are complaining about remakes and stuff, like the original or like the 4K will still be there.
Yeah, I know, but I just don't want it. I know it'll still be there, but the experience, the memory of seeing it that way is so great for me that I just don't want anything stepping on the memory. By the way, when I said Jessica Harper, I came very close to saying Jessica Simpson. And if she was going to be there, I would totally go.
I would not even question it. I love Jessica Simpson, but...
I was kind of joking, but okay.
I wasn't. I love her. I think she's great. But anyway, I digress. You have to go for the both of us.
Oh, all right. It's not the closing night film. I forget what the closing night film is, but yeah. Anyway, what have I seen? I saw a couple newer things, actually. I saw a movie called Super Dark Times, which is written by, I think, Luke Petrovsky and Ben Collins, who wrote Siren, and were recently guests on Shockwaves, I think. And it's sort of not a horror movie. It's more of kind of a really, really dark teenage drama in the spirit of, like, River's Edge and Mean Creek. But it's really good and really dark, and I think gets a lot of things right about what it's like to be a teenager. I don't think it's something that has to be watched during Scary Movie Month. I think you could probably wait until November to check it out, but I absolutely think it's worth checking out.
Would you say it's super dark?
I would say it's super dark. I saw a new film called Better Watch Out, which is a new, like, kind of Christmas-themed horror movie that I think is absolutely worth seeing as well. That's available on VOD right now, and I think the less you know about it, the better. I honestly knew nothing except that it was set at Christmas and that it was titled Better Watch Out. It does feature both of the actors from The Visit, the M. Night Shyamalan movie. And I will admit that I did not love the female actor in that movie. I like her a lot better here. I think maybe it was a case of her playing a role in The Visit that was kind of insufferable. But she's better here. I think it's very much worth checking out, again, if you're somebody who's looking for something newer to watch on VOD. What else? I'm trying to find something worth talking about.
I know you've seen a lot of stuff because you post like 3 7-word reviews every single day.
Well, I, you know, have a new gig that allows me to work from home a few days a week, and so I have horror movies on all day, lest anyone think that that's all I do is watch movies. I'm also working at the same time. I wrote a short review of a movie called Date of the Dead, which I put on Amazon Prime Video. And the thing about Amazon Prime Video is they have a huge horror selection. Netflix, not so much. Amazon Prime, huge horror selection. The problem with that is, I would say 75% of their selection is garbage. It's like, yep, little tiny, tiny indie movies that are oftentimes unwatchable, and that's nothing against the people that made them. Maybe they're just not for me. But I will usually know in 5 or 10 minutes, like, oh yeah, no, I can't watch this. But every once in a while, I like to take a chance on a movie, and so I pressed play on this movie, Date of the Dead, and it is a very small, very low-budget horror anthology of sorts. And it's not great, but I do think that it's very charming. It's pretty well made for the budget. And honestly, the thing that I really would recommend about it is I feel like all of the actors are really, really likable. And we don't often see that. Sometimes with some of these like micro-budget indies, they're casting their friends and people who maybe are not great actors. And sometimes they write horror films thinking, well, the characters all have to be shrill and awful because they exist to be killed. And the people that wrote and directed this film didn't do that. They instead wrote characters that we basically like and cast them with actors who are actually really good and who we really like. And so it was an interesting thing to see, like, the movie's okay, it's decent, but I think the performances elevate it to something that I would recommend.
And you said it was Date of the Dead?
Date of the Dead, yes.
Okay, that because, sounds worth checking out.
Yeah, all of the, there's one that's sort of a zombie movie, one that's sort of a slasher movie, and one that's like a home invasion film, but they all have a romance angle and manage to be weirdly romantic at times. Yeah, I think it's worth checking out. Especially, you know, if you already have Amazon Prime, it's more or less free. So,
okay.
What do you have to lose? It's not,
absolutely nothing.
It's not Phantom of the Paradise.
Okay. I don't think anything will ever be Phantom of the Paradise again.
I'm not endorsing it to that degree, but it's worth checking out at least once. You ready to talk about The Craft?
I was born ready to talk about The Craft.
You were born ready to talk about The Craft. So this is interesting because I saw The Craft in its original theatrical run when you were not born.
I was two.
You were two. Listen, I'm not doing the math. All right, so you were two. I was in the theater by myself seeing The Craft. And I thought it was fine. Like, it left me a little bit cold, even though I was like, yeah, I recognize that that's a good movie and kind of fun. But honestly, I feel like because the 90s were such a weird time for horror, and I think it's only now that we're starting to realize, oh, a lot of these movies were good. I think it was kind of hard to go see a horror movie in the 90s because it's like seeing this movie in a vacuum where it's not in the context of other horror movies. It's just this thing, and you can't fully appreciate it because you just feel like all the horror movies are kind of bad at the time, even though they're not. This is my own weird reaction. And so rewatching it for this podcast, I think, was the first time I had seen it in 20 years.
Did you have a different reaction?
I did. No, I think it's fun. I want to love it more than I do. And I wonder how much of that, and I'm guessing we're going to get your perspective, but I wonder how much of it has to do with not being a teenage girl. Because I'm not, despite my Twitter feed, despite my taste in movies, I am not a teenage girl. And I 100% get why this movie becomes so important to so many teenage girls or young women. In a way that I don't think it can be for young men, honestly, and that's okay. But I thought it was fun. I thought it was a really interesting sort of inversion on certain teen movie tropes, because even in the 90s, we weren't yet at the sort of teen movie rebirth that would come with, like, She's All That and Can't Hardly Wait. We had, like, Clueless, and that was kind of it. And so this movie's working on two subgenres that were not super popular at the time that it came out. Horror movies were not huge. Teen movies were not huge. And that way it's a little bit ahead of its time. But
I actually had that in my own notes because I think that's the reason that I identified with it so much.
Okay.
Because obviously I didn't watch this when I was two. So I saw this around the same time that I first saw, like, She's All That and 10 Things I Hate About You and Clueless, right? But this stood out to me because it was a little darker, and obviously I like more darkly inclined things. So it's interesting that you noted that this was a little bit of a hybrid between, like, 90s horror and that whole, like, coming-of-age teenage girl movie.
Well, I think, you know, Clueless comes out a year before this, and I love Clueless, but it's essentially about the most popular girl in school who has all the friends and can do whatever she wants and gets away with everything and is a good person, but is so far removed from what a lot of young people experience in high school. And so then a year later comes The Craft that says, no, this is a movie about the weirdos and the misfits and the kids that are picked on and what happens when they get some power, you know? And so I like it as a story about kind of bullying, in the same way that, you know, Carrie is sort of about bullying, because obviously that has become such a sort of a hot button issue, even though bullying hasn't necessarily become worse. There's such an awareness of it now that wasn't there before. And the way that we talk about bullying, that seeing The Craft now, for me, it took on a new kind of resonance as well.
I mean, even watching it now, the things that they were being bullied about are things that kids are still bullied about today. Like, I know this movie was aiming to be PG-13 and it got an R rating. And I think that the reason that happened is because of the heavy content that's in this movie. And I didn't even realize until I resaw it for this podcast, but the racist bullying from, I think her name's like Laura.
Christine Taylor.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, her character's name is Laura, I think.
Yeah.
But that is something that still happens now, actually, more than ever, I feel like. And then the attempted suicide is another really, really, like, severe topic.
Mm-hmm.
And that happened as a result of her bullying, as Sarah's bullying, you know? So I think it's interesting to see that This movie, had I seen it now for the first time, I feel like it would still have had the same resonating power that it did when I was a young adult. Or, you know, small child, whatever.
Right. Well, yeah, it's interesting that so much of it holds up. And, I think not to keep comparing it to Carrie, but I think in the way that it sort of combines the female experience of high school with a supernatural story, I mean, it's hard not to compare it to Carrie, which is sort of the template for that whole thing. And Carrie, in one sense, is quote-unquote dated because of the clothes and the haircuts and some of the music, but so much of the story and the themes are timeless, and that's why that movie holds up so well. And I feel like the same with The Craft, with the exception, you know, because on the one hand, it's like a super 90s movie. Like, it's almost as 90s as Jennifer Aniston's Leprechaun shorts. Every song on the soundtrack, again, you were two when it came out, but for me, it was every song on the soundtrack was like, oh, that was high school, and that was high school, and that was high school. So,
can we talk about how the House Known As Now cover became kind of like the theme song for witches in the 90s, because I know that Charmed used the same exact song, and I don't know how that song has any relevance to witches, but
I have never seen an episode of Charmed. Was that like the opening to Charmed?
Yeah, so that was like the theme song. That was the opening, and I don't understand why, because there's nothing witchy in the content of that song. Interesting selection.
I was surprised to hear the Beatles cover right at the beginning of the movie. I did not remember it opening with a Beatles cover.
That cover is interesting.
It's by Our Lady Peace. Honestly, I pulled up like the Wikipedia page for the soundtrack, and it's like Love Spit Love, Elastica, Sponge, Letters to Cleo, all bands that had like one popular song in the 90s. And it is the most 90s soundtrack outside of like The Crow.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you're right. That is super 90s too. But I don't know. I love the 90s vibe from this movie. I mean, the clothes is insanely amazing. It actually inspired my own aesthetic, if I do say so myself.
Which witch do you identify with most?
I want you to guess.
I don't know. I mean, I want to say Firuza Balk, because she's kind of the alpha, but
I would say so, too. Okay. Not because I'm an alpha, like, female or anything, but just because she, oh my god, she's just so dark looking, and I just love the way she dresses in this movie, because she is definitely the most extreme out of all four of them in terms of her personality and also the way she dresses. So you guessed correctly.
Thank you. We are kind of jumping around all over the place, but let's talk about Firuza Balk, because I forgot that she was like a child actress. So when I saw The Craft in 96, I didn't put it together. Like, oh, she's the little girl from Return to Oz. For me, she was just this random find. And I go back and forth between thinking, like what she does is so memorable. So I'm not going to say she's bad in the movie. But there are times where I feel like she's so over the top and ridiculous that it becomes campy. And then there's other times where I think what she's doing is brilliant, and it keeps going back and forth, which maybe is by design. Maybe that's what she was going for with the performance, but like, she's so big and nobody else really is, that she, you know, she, for years, she was, for me, when I would see her pop up in anything else, it was, oh, the witch from The Craft.
That's funny. For me, she was Sapphire from Almost Famous, but I think it works, because remember, her character comes from a household where, like, domestic violence and, you know, she's ignored in the house. So I feel like she's over the top like that because she wants to be noticed. That's the reason that she kind of has this, like, meltdown.
Yeah.
So I think it completely worked. I get that there's a particular scene at a party where she goes, like, really far. But my favorite thing that she does in that movie is when, like, she's being more threatening towards Sarah. That one scene in the bathroom where she's like, oh, I hope you can sleep. That scared the shit out of me. More than her, like, you know, eruptions.
Right.
So
it's, you know, there are not that many movies about witches. I don't think, in comparison to some of the other horror icons, and I know even as I say that, last year alone we had the Love Witch and we had the Witch, and, you know, there are quite a few witch movies that we can point to. I feel like they were way more popular in, like, the 70s. In the 80s, we did not get very many, except for, like, Teen Witch and The Witches of Eastwick. I'm sure there were a couple other ones, so before you all start correcting me in the comments, like, I know, I'm not naming all of them. And then in the 90s, you know, I think in part thanks to The Craft and thanks to Charmed and whatever, you know, there was a little bit of a resurgence, but I forget where I was going with this. But it doesn't seem like the movie wants to be scary. Do you think that's a fair assessment?
I 100% think it's a fair assessment, but that final scene was the scariest thing I've ever seen, I think.
What?
It was so creepy. But remember, I saw this when I was like 8. So my memory of that scene is being scared shitless.
Okay.
You know what I mean? But I do get what you're saying, because a lot of the movies that dealt with witches in the 90s were not scary at all. They were actually more heartwarming. Like Practical Magic, one of my favorites. Adam Risky, if you're watching this or listening to this, you need to watch it immediately.
Practical Magic is one of your favorites?
Why are you saying it like that? I love Practical Magic.
I am not going to talk trash about Practical Magic. Clearly, I need to revisit it.
No. I want an honest assessment of Practical Magic.
I have not seen it in a long time.
First of all, Nicole Kidman. Second of all, that movie is just so warm. And I find that a lot of the witchy movies from the 90s are warm, and they remind me of the fall time that I don't get here in Miami. So maybe that's why I love them so much. But I get it, because the witch movies are not scary, but I would still consider them horror, because how could you not?
Well, because every witch movie ends up essentially becoming about female empowerment, which mm-hmm. I get in that, you know, that's sort of central to the witch mythos, with the exception of, like, The Witch. I don't think that's entirely what that movie is about, although we could probably debate those last few moments. And so I think there's not always a need to necessarily make it a horror film, right? Practical Magic doesn't have to be a horror film. Witches of Eastwick doesn't have to be a horror film, because they're using witchcraft as a metaphor for just female empowerment, and there's no need to mm-hmm. actually incorporate horror into the film. So I do appreciate that while it's not, like, overtly horrifying for the most part, The Craft is still operating as a horror movie, you know?
Yeah, I would say that this is more horror inclined than Practical Magic, for
yes,
sure.
Definitely. I also forgot that, you know, each of the girls is being bullied or ostracized for different reasons. I think because, again, it had been so long since I'd seen it, my memory was just, oh, well, they're just the goth girls, and so naturally they are outcasts. But you have, you know, Rachel True being bullied for race, which it's so odd to hear Christine Taylor, who, you know, is always cast as, like, a super nice person and played Marsha Brady in the Brady Bunch movies, to hear her say the word negroid, which I don't even think is a word, but she's being bullied for being African-American, and you have Fairuza Balk being bullied more so, not because she's a giant fucking weirdo, but more so because she's very, very poor. You know, the movie really goes out of its way to say that she comes from poverty.
And I think they're at a private school, too.
Yes.
Right? Or is it just a Catholic school?
I mean, it sure seems like a Catholic school.
I mean, it's in L.A., so
right.
I'm going to go with it's in a private school.
I'm trying to read right now, because it seems weird if it was a Catholic school, why would there not be anything really about religion?
And why would they let them dress that way? I know that Catholic schools are a little bit stricter than
right,
that.
Right. But there is clearly a uniform situation going on. Neve Campbell, of course, is being bullied because she has this awful skin condition. Which I guess is how they get around, like, people picking on Neve Campbell, who's clearly one of the most beautiful people at the school, right? But no one would think that because she has this skin condition. And I just read that originally Robin Tunney was going to play that part. And then they decided to go with her for the lead, and Neve Campbell slid into that role. And it's a little bit frustrating as I watch the film, because I think the first half does a nice job of setting up some of the different plights, although I don't think Rachel True's storyline is ever really developed. You get that one nasty scene with Christine Taylor calling her that awful name, and then it's more or less dropped.
We don't see a lot of her home life either, and I feel like we see a lot of the other girls.
Yeah, well, and even Neve Campbell, like, you get that really fucked up scene where she's getting the operation and the camera's right in on her face and she's crying, and it's really hard to watch. It was actually reminding me of, like, the Spinal Tap scene from The Exorcist. It's really hard to watch, and she's really good in it, and I think it brings a level of sort of humanity and realism to the film. And then about halfway through, once her wish comes true, or her spell, I don't want to say wish, I don't want to conjure up the Wishmaster. Once her spell works and the scars go away and everyone's like, oh, she's so hot, she kind of disappears from the movie as well. And it really just becomes about Robin Tunney and Fairuza Balk.
Yeah, I thought that was a little strange, because then at the very end they come back, but it doesn't feel as authentic because they kind of disappeared for that one period of time. You know what I mean?
Are you talking about when they come back, like, to try to...
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, exactly.
And she shows them that she still has the power.
Do you think that they all had powers? Or do you think that Sarah was the only one with the powers?
Huh. Honestly, that never totally occurred to me.
Because remember, they had been trying to start a coven, but they weren't really effective until they saw that Sarah was, like, levitating her pencil, and then they asked her to join, and then weird shit started happening. So I'm convinced that they were just kind of, like, working off of her own power.
Honestly, that never occurred to me, because the movie kind of says, like, we need a fourth, so I kind of assumed it was because they found a fourth who did have some sort of ability, that they were all casting spells, but you may be right. But doesn't, I mean, it's pretty clear that Fairuza Balk, like, gets the power as well, right?
The spirit, right?
Right. Yeah. The spirit of Manon, is that right?
Yes, which, by the way, I read was not a real deity, because they didn't want to, like, have people who saw the movie and became obsessed with it the way I did go invoking spirits, like real ones. So that's interesting.
Have you played Light as a Feather, Stiff as a Board before?
So I tried, but I was always a heavy girl, so it never worked.
I feel like I, like, did it at, you know, parties, like boy-girl parties in junior high, but I don't think we ever actually got anybody off the ground.
I wonder if anyone else has. I know that's, like, a party game, but I feel like that can't work. You can't lift people with your fingers.
I don't think so, but if they invoke the spirit of Manon, maybe they can.
Perhaps.
Let's talk about Skeet Ulrich, because I feel that he's miscast in this movie.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know. He's, like, doing something weird. Maybe it's just, maybe I'm not appreciating the way that he comes at this role. He seems so weirdly non-committal, and maybe it's an acting choice that he's making. Like, even when he's in love with Robin Tunney and kind of obsessed, he doesn't...
You're right.
He doesn't go, like, desperate with it. He doesn't go dark with it until, you know, the scene where he essentially tries to force himself on her, and then obviously it gets very dark. But the scenes where he's just showing up at her house or something, there's something weirdly laid back and affable about it.
It seems kind of aloof, right?
Yeah, and I can't tell, like, is this a weird acting choice that he made, or is he just miscast in the part?
Now that you mention it, I feel like they could have literally cast anybody.
Kind of, right?
You know what I mean? And it would have been the same effect.
Also, why does she want him to be in love with her so bad? Like, he's kind of
a
dick.
He was kind of a shithead. Exactly. Right. I don't know. I think it's because she's new at the school, you know. She probably just wants that leverage. And also she wants it to be like, oh, we're a couple now. So that rumor he was spreading is kind of like obliterated. You know what I mean? Because now it means like, I, like, why would he be with me if I was
right.
a lazy lay?
Right, right,
that
right.
was the rumor he was spreading. So that's what I'm assuming.
So when she wants him to be her boyfriend, is there's no measure of revenge in that in terms of like getting back at him for the rumor?
I don't know.
She really wants to be together with him? Like, that's crazy to me.
I don't know if she was seeking revenge only because at first it was super petty stuff, like, hold my books.
Right.
It wasn't like, oh, no, now suddenly I'm not going to talk to you, because she was still going along with it.
But even the hold my books is kind of like she's making him her love slave, right?
Like, right, I guess that's true.
Like Aiden Quinn looks- in Practical Magic?
Oh, God.
Isn't he a love slave in that movie?
Not really.
He's not? He's not under a spell and in love with Sandra Bullock?
I mean, he's like under a spell, but he's not a love slave.
We are all under Sandra Bullock's spell. Like, let's not pretend that that's not a thing.
Except me, I'm under Nicole Kidman's spell.
I get it. I get it.
Adam gets it, too. But he hasn't seen the movie, so
I'm a big proponent of 90s Kidman and 2000s Kidman too. Nothing, no, you know, no disrespect to 2000s Kidman, but 90s Kidman is peak Kidman. And actually, when Practical Magic came out, I think I was like not feeling Sandra Bullock. Like, I definitely fell in love with her in Demolition Man and Speed, and I was all and While You Were Sleeping, I was all about Sandra Bullock. And then she made like 6 garbage movies in a row, and I was just off the Sandy B train, and then it was like 28 Days and Miss Congeniality kind of won me back, and I've been on the Sandy B train ever since.
So the 16 bad movies,
yeah,
is Practical Magic in there?
It may have been at the time, and like I said, I need to revisit it, so I apologize to any of you Practical Magic fans out there who are listening and feeling heartbroken that I'm not loving that movie.
I wonder if you'd like it. I really do wonder if you'd like it, because it is super, I mean, come on, it's super cheesy, but it makes me happy. And, you know, it might have something to do with the whole, like, witchcraft as a vessel for empowerment thing.
Right.
It's just, it's great.
I think it was, like, one of the first movies I went to see. In the year it came out, I was laid up for a couple weeks with an appendicitis, and I was, like, recovering from surgery. And then I think once I got better, it was, like, one of the first movies I went to see. Again, by myself, much the same way I saw The Craft.
And then you got appendicitis again.
And then I got appendicitis again. And I haven't seen it since. I'm pretty sure I own it, though, so I can definitely watch it once October is over. There's no way
you
I'm watching
watch
it this
it
month.
With Adam.
Maybe. Maybe. We'll pretend we're on a double date with Sandy B and Kidman.
Oh, gosh.
But back to The Craft.
I feel like you should just title this witchcraft movie.
Yeah, it's a. I do feel like I think the first half of the movie works better than the second half, because I feel like the first half is much more sort of that metaphor for high school and witchcraft as sort of a tool to navigate high school, to get back at the people who are mean to you, to reinvent yourself as the person you want to be, the way that so many of us wish we could do in high school. And then I feel like in the second half, it gets kind of bogged down in, like I said, the witch battle between Firouza Balk and Robin Tunney, and kind of into special effects and them
really
turning on
one,
her. Yeah, right. Not great special effects. And there are, you know, again, the effective moments. I do like one of the more famous shots from the film when Firouza Balk kind of glides across the floor when she's
amazing.
About
I do
to
like that shot a lot.
Chuck skeet out of a window.
rightfully deserved, I think.
Yeah, right. He was a real dick.
I agree. But it's true. I feel like the second half of the movie becomes more about good versus bad when you do have that power. And it doesn't have much to do with the high school thing anymore, which is something I really loved about the movie, you know?
Yeah. It
And
becomes.
also,
Go ahead.
the pacing is very weird at the end. I don't think that Bonnie and Rochelle should have come back. I think that was not a good ending. I think it should have ended when we see Nancy in the insane asylum.
Yeah, I mean, I get what they're going for again with the Bonnie and Rochelle thing because it is that idea of. And again, it's just something that they don't really explore enough, so it's kind of done in half measures. But it's that idea of mean girls who are desperate for an alpha. They're kind of followers,
Followers, yeah.
right? So it's
Jinx.
yeah, right? It's Lacey Chabert and Amanda Seyfried, right? And Mean Girls,
Yeah.
who or Heather Duke and Heather. Shit. Heather Duke, Heather Chandler, Heather. Oh my gosh, I'm so upset that I can't think of the third Heather. But yeah, same thing where it's like if you get rid of one leader, then they just need a new one to replace her. And so they're looking for Robin Tunney to be that new leader. But again, it's just in the context of that one scene, and it's not really an idea that's developed much further than that.
Well, see, the reason that I asked you about that, do you think they have powers
Yeah.
question in the beginning, is because I feel like they came back because they knew that they were powerless without Sarah. And they wanted that back. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, so don't they even, but don't they say like she doesn't have powers anymore and that's why she shows them that she does?
Well, I don't know. Do you think they lost their power then?
Yeah,
Like,
no, they say
something's wrong.
they say they did.
Yeah, but I don't know if they even had powers to begin with.
You might be right. Yeah. Again, I hadn't thought about the idea that it was really just Robin Tunney that had the power all along.
Because this would change the context of the movie completely for me. Because if she was the only one with the power, then it's like this cute story about how the kind-hearted people have the real power here. But if they all had power, then I'm like, okay, never mind.
Let's talk about Robin Tunney because she's an actor that I really like. I don't want to say she's miscast here because I think she's good in the movie. I honestly do, but
Feel like being contrasted with her previous role, I see where you're coming from. Because she...
it's like she needs to play darker and she's playing like so normal here that it feels wrong.
You mean minus the witchcraft?
Mine, well, right, because she's essentially a pretty normal girl who happens to fall in with these girls, but she doesn't have that whole dark, mysterious goth thing the way that they do. She's a little bit more, you know, squeaky clean. And so maybe that is the inspiration for her casting because they know that she has the ability to go dark. And so maybe it's us wondering as we watch Robin Tunney, like, oh, is she going to go down that path that we think she's so well suited to go down? Or is she going to remain, you know, for lack of a better word, clean? Or I don't want to say chaste because that implies something about sex that I'm not talking about at all. So maybe it's really smart casting, but there's something about her squareness in that movie that feels a little bit off to me.
I agree. I mean, I feel like that casting choice or like your justification for their casting would only work if you knew her, like if you knew Robin's work. Because I never was like, oh, I wonder if she's going to go dark until I saw Empire Records.
Right.
So I'm not sure. Also, the movie was kind of ruined for me now because
I know what you're about to say.
I did not know that she was wearing a wig this whole time. Okay, 23 years of life, Patrick. I was like,
21
wow,
years of
she's.
life, 21 years. You were 2 when it came out.
Okay, you're right. I was thinking she had the best hair. And now I'm like, wait, she shaved not too far before this movie. And somebody pointed it out, and they pointed out her hairline, and I was like, shit, I can't not look at it now. So great. And now The Craft is...
We should have known in that scene where she changes her hair color, because real hair doesn't do that.
Well, no shit, magic. But
for half a second, you were about... Of course it's a special effect. I was like, are you about to correct me on this? of course it's a special effect. I will say I did not know it was a wig either, and I'm usually pretty good about noticing that. I don't know why. I have this weird thing where I zero in on actors' hair, because when they have haircuts that don't match up from scene to scene, it makes me crazy, or when they're clearly wearing...
I've mentioned this multiple times.
I'm sure I have. I don't know what it is. When they're clearly wearing wigs, it makes me crazy. And I did not know. So now the next time I watch, maybe it will be the only thing I see. And maybe I'll say, oh, it's more apparent to me than ever that she's wearing a wig. But I have never noticed. So it must be a pretty good wig.
It is a pretty good wig. Because I was like, holy shit, she's got great hair. But now I know the truth. It's so devastating how little details like that could just completely change a movie.
How many real life witches do you think had to die so that she could wear that wig?
Probably a few.
Yeah, right? So. That is messed
up. They actually had a real life witch on set for this movie, which I thought was pretty considerate. Because there are a lot of witchcraft movies that misrepresent the religion.
Okay. And this one does not?
So I was thinking about this earlier, and I was like, what is the most accurate portrayal of witches? And it's not The Craft, because the religion is very nature-based, and it's very spiritual. The occult shop in this movie, that's pretty accurate.
Okay.
Because she's, you know, focusing on energies and things like that. You can't do magic, like, with a snap of your fingers or, like, passing your hands over your hair. There's, like, a process. So this is half accurate, half inaccurate, but it's still pretty accurate in comparison to other movies like Hocus Pocus or something.
What is the most accurate, then?
Practical magic.
Stop it.
I'm not joking. I mean...
How is Practical Magic the most accurate?
Well, in that movie, they... literally show scenes of, like, Nicole Kidman concocting this, you know, substance of some sort with herbs and things. And Sandra Bullock, her character, makes shampoos and natural remedies using herbs and nature and stuff. So that's what witches do. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, please, no witches come after me.
Oh, no, but... they're all after you now.
Oh, God, this is Suspiria. You see, there's the Suspiria flu again.
Your hair is going to start falling out.
Oh, God. But
you're going to be in love with Robin Tunney.
More so?
I mean, one girl has her hair fall out. Somebody else gets to be in love with Robin Tunney. I don't feel like these punishments are equal.
I think the punishment suits the crime. Until he tries to sexually assault her.
Right.
But he still dies, so I think...
Good point.
I think it's fair.
Does Christine Taylor's hair grow back?
I'm not sure. I don't think we ever get to that point.
Mm.
I hope not.
Fuck her.
I agree. I agree. That's what I mean. Like, a lot of the content in this is kind of dark, isn't it? Like, there's the racism, there's the attempted suicide, there's the attempted assault. You know what I mean? Like, then there's the domestic violence in Nancy's house. It was kind of really heavy for a teenage movie in the 90s.
But I also feel like it's dealing with certain things. Like, I kind of wish the racism had been handled a little bit differently. A, because it's so casual, and B, because it's really confined to just that one scene. Not that I needed more racism in The Craft. I'm not upset that there wasn't enough racism. But you know, the teen suicide and even some of the stuff with the sexual assault. I think a lot of that is at least recognizable to the audience of this movie. You know, if high school girls are sort of the audience for this movie, I think there's something that's relatable in a lot of the scenarios to them, which isn't to say that racism isn't relatable to them, but I don't think it's handled in a way that's as relatable as something like Robin Tunney's past suicide attempt. And maybe that's, again, me coming from a position of white privilege because no one has ever called me a weird made-up racist term. But I just wish that it had been handled in a way that, to me, would feel truer to the high school experience. Again, somebody may be listening to this and saying, oh, that's exactly how it was for me. You know, that's literally what girls said to me. So if that's the case, I apologize. But I think,
feel like,
oh, go ahead.
They paid the least amount of attention to her,
yes,
story, which is a shame because they could have done so much, but that was kind of like an easy way to tell her story. And then that's it.
Well, you know, and there's some, and not to level accusations of racism against the craft, but there is something kind of racist about it where it's like, how about her? She's black, so somebody makes fun of her for being black. Okay, we're done. That is the totality of her experience in this movie. She exists to be very little except for their black friend who is attacked for being black. And it would have been nice had the movie made her more of a fully realized character who then, you know, other people weren't able to see past her race and get to know, oh, she's all this other stuff too. But the movie doesn't bother to do that. The movie essentially says, like, yeah, you're black.
Exactly. I have conflicting opinions about this because I do feel like it's interesting that they are in LA and it's obviously a mainly white school.
Yeah.
So I think her struggle does have a lot to do with her race, you know what I mean? But you're right. I mean, she's not only a product of that racism, you know what I mean? Like, she should have been more developed, I feel like.
Right. Yeah, and I do absolutely think that her race would inform her experiences in that school, and I don't have a problem with that being, you know, a major source of conflict for her because, as you say, it is a mostly white school and a lot of upper-class white school out in L.A., and yeah, there's a very strong chance that they are going to treat her differently because she's one of the few people of color in the school. Again, I just wish that maybe it had been handled in a way that wasn't on the level of, like, a very special Saved by the Bell.
I agree.
Which really The Craft is. The Craft is really just a very special episode of Saved by the Bell.
Which is why it's so incredible. You know what I mean?
And Rachel True is really just Lisa Turtle.
Oh, God. By the way, she was the oldest of the cast.
Yeah.
Well, at least of the girls.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. She has not aged a day.
Lisa Turtle?
Still. No.
Oh, Rachel God. True. Have you seen Lisa Turtle lately?
No. I don't feel like I want to.
No, don't.
I'm going to Google it after this.
You're better off not.
Oh, wow. I love this movie. You're right. I do wish that they had developed them a little bit more. The Bonnie character, I feel like that was interesting because she becomes a completely different person, not even just physically.
Yeah.
Which is interesting. You
yeah.
know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I didn't see that with Rachel's character.
Well, again, I do think it speaks to this idea, to go back to it being, I think, an effective high school movie. How much of your confidence and how much of your self-image is wrapped up in your appearance. And once her appearance was a certain way and she was getting attention for that, it really did change who she was. And again, think back to high school, which isn't to say that even, you know, the really the best looking girls or the best looking guys didn't experience their own insecurities. I'm sure they did, but They have.
I wouldn't know.
Me either, trust me. But they had a, I'll have to ask Erica. But they had a confidence to them that the rest of us didn't. And so to see Neve Campbell sort of undergo that transformation, to me, does kind of ring true.
That was probably the one that resonated with me the most, to be honest. Maybe it's just because I want to be Neve Campbell so badly, but... And another thing that was kind of like, there was like tension between my perspectives here, because like we mentioned earlier, we know that witchcraft is used as like an empowerment tool in these movies, but also it kind of antagonizes it, because 3 out of 4 of them become like huge bitches. You know what I mean? So what is the movie trying to say?
Well, I think it goes back to, unfortunately, the trope of many high school films, especially those that do incorporate maybe some sort of supernatural component, whether it, you know, even like Teen Wolf, right? Teen Wolf says high schooler becomes werewolf, becomes an asshole because he kind of forgets who he is. And
I'm feeling like he was always an asshole.
He becomes so wrapped up in who he is now and identifying as a wolf and in his newfound abilities and in his newfound popularity. And he sort of loses sight of his roots, right? And that's sort of what the craft does as well, that once they have these powers, it allows them to lose sight of who they were. Although at the same time, the movie also suggests... We don't get to know them necessarily as, like, good people who lose themselves.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, Nancy seems like she was always that way.
Yeah,
you know?
It's really more that, like, this is who they are. They just don't have the power to back it up yet. And then once they get the power, they get to be the monsters that they always wanted to be. So it is a little bit different.
I guess I can find some solace in the fact that at least the good wins here.
Right.
Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert. Well, and yet, you know, Bonnie and Rachel True don't have to, Rochelle, don't have to really pay for any of the stuff they did.
Didn't they? Okay, so there was something about, like, what you put out into the universe comes back at you times 3. That never happened. I know that they saw the reflection and they saw what could happen, but that never happened. It would have been interesting if it happened, because then they would have paid for the things that they did.
Right.
What, I don't think there was enough time, though.
Don't you think, like, bringing back Bonnie's scars would be far too cruel?
Well, yeah, she didn't really do anything. But she did try to kill somebody. Like, she was trying to kill...
No, she did, and she sucks, but, like, before she's a witch, we see how much legit pain they are causing her, both emotionally and physically. Well, no, I was just thinking the same thing. I was like, you know, they should have experienced some punishment, but to bring back her scars is almost unreasonably cruel, because she didn't deserve them before becoming a witch, so she really doesn't deserve them after being one, you know? Maybe they just should have made her, like, ugly, like... They could have just made her...
actually ugly.
Yeah, like, they could have just made her look like me instead of Neve Campbell, and then...
Because let's be real, Neve Campbell was never ugly.
No, exactly. That's what I'm saying. Ugly. Even with the scars, like, come on, who are we kidding? She's still Neve Campbell.
I mean, but, you know, it goes to say, like, you could be super insecure and look like Neve Campbell.
Right.
So it makes me feel a little better.
Yes, absolutely. Again, that's why I think that the movie... functions pretty well as a movie about high school, and why I do think that there is a specific type of young girl, teenage girl, young boys. I don't mean to isolate, you know, young boys. I just think that this is a movie that speaks more directly by design to young women who saw this movie and felt like it was acknowledging them and talking to them in a way that a lot of other movies of the period were not. They, you know, these are the same girls who would watch The Breakfast Club and identify deeply with Ally Sheedy and feel betrayed at the end when they turn her into Molly Ringwald, right?
I hated that ending.
No, it's garbage. God, it's the worst.
It's so garbage, because let's be real. She's the better character.
Of course she is. Of course you know what she I mean? Is. And so, she's a total babe when she's all, you know, weird. So to turn her into this other thing is such a betrayal. It's my biggest complaint about that movie. But so for people who watched that movie and felt that, here comes The Craft, which essentially says, oh, here's a movie about four Ally Sheedys. And don't worry, we're not going to turn them into Molly Ringwald. In fact, we're going to give them a measure of revenge against the Molly Ringwalds of the world, you know, or the Emilio Estevez.
Robin Tooney's character is Molly Ringwald to me because she, like you mentioned, she's like a little bit pristine and she's got this like clean cut look and she never really goes. Does she ever get darker in her aesthetic even?
Not really, no. Although in that shot of them walking down the hallway, which has become pretty iconic, she certainly looks like she fits in. She doesn't stand right. out in any real way.
And, I mean, she still is outcasted, which I also think is interesting because it goes to show that you could be, like, the prettiest girl and you could still be someone who doesn't fit in, you know? But it's just, I don't know. It wasn't viable to me.
Is she outcast because she's new or is she outcast because of who she befriends?
She
Or because outcast. Of the rumor that Skeet Ulrich starts?
Well, no, because remember, Skeet...
Skeet, you son of a bitch.
He was trying to befriend her so that he could, you know, have sex with her.
Right.
But he wouldn't have, I mean, I guess he would have done that with Nancy because he did, but he's the one that warns her about those girls. So I think that she becomes an outcast because of who she starts hanging out with.
Okay.
So I really don't, I think her fate could have been much different had she not hung out with them. I think that she would have never been involved with the witches or the outcasts.
And that becomes a very different movie, right?
One that I wouldn't watch.
Because it's essentially a movie about witches in which there are no witches. It's just about people in high school, basically.
So basically lots of witches.
Yeah. Oh, well, sure. Did this, I mean, Clueless had the shot of them walking down the hallway kind of in slow motion, but I feel like this is the one that sort of codified it. Like when Jawbreaker did that shot, isn't it essentially just riffing on The Craft?
Well, did Jawbreaker come, that's after.
Jawbreaker's craft, right? After, yeah.
You know what? I never even realized that that is such a cliche shot in these, like, teenage movies because yeah. You're right, it's in Clueless, it's in The Craft, it's in Jawbreaker, it's even in Mean Girls.
Yeah.
So
I guess that's how you show female power, right? They walk down a hallway in slow motion.
I don't know, but I love those scenes. They make me feel powerful just watching them. So
are you a Jawbreaker fan?
Well, Patrick, my favorite ever, is in it, so of course.
Is it Rose McGowan?
Of course. Okay. So I love that movie, actually. Do you?
I do not, but I will not speak ill of Rose McGowan, particularly at this time.
To be fair, I have to rewatch it, just like you have to rewatch Practical Magic.
My feelings about Jawbreaker, and I don't remember it that well, and it has nothing to do with Rose McGowan. Obviously, she's very good in the movie, but it was just like, oh, this feels like warmed over Heathers / The Craft.
Oh, yeah. I said that.
I don't know. But whatever. Whatever. It's fine. Again,
you've been saying so many things that have changed my mind about my most beloved movies, Patrick.
I'm sorry. Don't let me near anything else that you hold dear.
But it's fair because you're giving me more things that I love, like Phantom of the Paradise.
That's right. You're welcome. anything else that you want to say about The Craft before we wrap up?
I think this is a great movie to watch during Scary Movie Month, despite it's not being scary, because of the emotions that it conveys. And it is for people like us that, I mean, in the real world, we kind of are outcasted by being like such big horror fans and stuff. So watching something like this makes me feel better because I feel powerful just like they are.
Very well said.
Thank you.
thanks for talking about The Craft with me. It was super fun.
It was the best ever. Now I'm going to watch it again just to make fun of Robin Tooney's bad.
I am going to try to track down the soundtrack just so I can travel back in time to 20 years ago when soundtracks could be filled with good songs by one-hit wonders.
And when I was three.
And when you were three. My God. Anyway, thank you guys for listening. As always, you can find all of our great content at fthismovie.com. You can read writing from Alejandra there. She just published something this week, so make sure that you read it. I mention this because, you know, when you write stuff or when you're on or, like, it gets shared more, so we will have new people listening and new people reading because of your association.
I love being used.
Oh, yeah.
I love being used.
Of course.
Also, if you are listening to this, me and Patrick were having a conversation earlier about how we really wish more women would involve themselves in the comments and just interact with us more. I'm a little lonely, so don't be shy.
You know what would be great is if at least one woman I can think of would write more seven-word reviews and maybe lead by example.
Fair enough.
Anyway, yeah, so fthismovie.com. We're on Twitter, at fthismovie. Facebook, Instagram, sometimes, barely ever, YouTube. We have a YouTube channel that Alejandra just discovered last week, so that's very exciting.
Good.
No, it's not. Or you can email us, as always, at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. Keep participating in the Scary Movie Challenge. We're going to have more great Scary Movie Month content all month long. Thank you guys for listening. Thanks again, Ollie.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Listening to FS Movie.